This is the UK Geocaching Podcast for December of 2015, and it's either Pod 48, Pod 49, or Pod 50. I will explain more after the music. Right, LJ feels left out because he didn't say anything before the music.
I feel like I'm not included.
When, in fact, he's done most of the talking this evening.
We are
actually recording this intro after we've recorded the main show.
No, we're not. We're talking in a minute to Chris from Groundspeak.
Groundspeak.
In a minute, but we've actually done it already.
Over the last two and a bit hours.
Don't tell anyone, because we'll edit it really cleverly, so it sounds like it's sort of really well planned.
This is... Now, in the pre-mute music, I said it's either Pod 48, 49, or Pod 50.
I know why.
We've had 500-plus downloads of this show of the November show.
Yeah.
Out of those 500 downloads... Two people have contacted me to say that I got the pod number wrong.
Was it Lucy was one of them?
Lucy was one of them, and Geo Bertram was the other one.
Oh, okay.
Because he said on Twitter, what happened to Pod 48?
I saw this, yeah.
And I responded was, we recorded it, but it's only releasable to those people that pay us £1 million or more. What actually happened was I got the numbering wrong.
Yeah, figures.
So I don't really know whether we should call this show 49A or 49.5.
Call it 49.5.
But yeah. If I call it show 49.5, then does that make the January show our 50th show?
Yes, I think. I don't know.
We're happy with that?
Yeah, okay.
So the January 2016 will be an anniversary show because it's our 50th show.
Yeah, it seems an appropriate time to do an anniversary show, January.
Fantastic. Now... Apart from a very quick chat with Static J,
we have pretty much spoken to Chris. We spoke to Chris for a couple of hours.
We got online with him at just after 7:30, and we got offline with him at just after 9:30.
He's such a nice bloke. Really easy to chat with. He's very, very accommodating to all of our stupid questions.
And our bickering. He was quite tolerant of our bickering as well. Yeah.
And he went to use the bathroom. Or the restroom.
The restroom,
yeah.
But now he's going to go and have a wee.
Yeah, he's going to... No, he's going to... What did he say? He was going to give a wee. Go for a wee.
No, he's going to take a wee.
Take a wee, that was it.
Yeah, no, you don't take a wee, you have a wee.
Anyway,
We've challenged him to drop some Britishisms into his next meeting, so he's going to have to say something like, I've got to change my trousers rather than my pants.
Yeah. The listeners are going to have to... Pause the show, probably, unless you want to listen to the whole thing all in one go, which is a long interview. But I have to say, it's, in my opinion, our best show.
I have really, really enjoyed doing this whole thing. Now, over the last 2 or 3 months, we've been asking you guys to submit your questions to us. We ended up with, I think, 6 plus a couple of mine plus a bit of chat. And that is going to dominate basically all of this show.
Yeah.
The only bit where it's going to be a break is where I'm going to throw in the quick chat with Static J that we've just had, who joined us. Because on Periscope, I said, come and find us. We're on Skype. Give us a shout and we'll record with you for a few minutes. So we did exactly that with Jay a few minutes ago. And we'll throw that in. And then it's going to go straight back to Chris with the Cacher of the Month.
I'm looking forward. I actually genuinely am going to listen back to the show, and I'm going to log on to our website.
There's a first time for everything.
No, I occasionally listen. I don't like the sound of my voice. I know this, but I will genuinely listen back, and I will do it in a number of different ways. I might visit our website at ukgcpodcast.com, where you can download this show and previous shows.
Yep.
But if you're listening to this show, you probably know that you can get it from the website or one of these places that I'm going to mention.
Where else can we find it?
We can also find it on Stitcher, which is podcast radio.
Yep.
You can find us on where everyone seems to download podcasts from, which is iTunes, by looking up UK Geocaching Podcast. That's all right. You just take a big suck on your vape there.
I will do.
That's fine. Just mid-conversation.
2.5 hours I'm listening. I can't do more than two things at once.
So you can hit us on Stitcher Podcast Radio. You can get us on iTunes. You can now get us on Deezer, which is, I think it's all. Is it a subscription or is it?
No, I think it's free.
Can you get some of it free with adverts? I think it's supported adverts, something like that. But look us up on Deezer. If you've got Deezer, you can find us on there. You can find us on RSS feeds, which apparently lead into other programs, which I don't understand how this works, but it somehow our show appears on other applications and
listings,
things like that.
Listings,
thank you. So you can get us in loads of places. Cool. Loads!
Right. Shall we stop gibbering and let's go into the...
I've got one more thing to bring up.
Go on, then.
That we haven't brought up all month, because I had a good month cashing.
Did you? How many did you do?
19!
Wow.
My next cash is a mini milestone, as I like to call them.
Is it 750?
It will be 650. Oh, so it's a mini milestone. Hey, don't belittle my 650 that's up and coming.
I thought you were further on than you were.
Unfortunately not. I was aiming to have 750 by the end of the year, and yeah. This is going to be my worst year of geocaching since I started, unfortunately.
I have absolutely no idea how many I've done this month. I don't really care how many I've done this month. The ones that I have done, I have enjoyed. I've been out and done a few. I think I've done a couple with my brother. I went down to Gosport and did a few.
I did a few at Gosport with you.
Yeah, that was right at the beginning.
Do you know what? It's been such a long night that I said that sentence, and even nanoseconds later, I'm not sure it made sense. I will rephrase it. I think what I meant to say was I went geocaching in Gosport with you. But I don't know if that's what I said.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. Because we dropped Surfer Girl off to meet some friends for breakfast lunch.
Yeah, her and the boy went for breakfast lunch,
yeah,
didn't they?
And we went and did a bit. No.
Oh, no. We took the boy
because
with us.
We were on Periscope, because yes. We went down to Hassle Wall.
Yeah, and you cut your finger.
Yes.
That was funny.
Didn't half get some trouble for that.
Well, you signed the log with blood,
putting bloody photos, photos with blood in them, of my finger on our geocaching.
Who did you get in trouble with?
Well, there's a few people said you can't do that. So there might be people sensitive about seeing blood.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, it's a fact of life. We bleed.
Yeah. Especially when we stick our finger in sharp razor flint.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very, very bad idea. Anyway, you obviously found a couple then this month.
Yeah, I really can't remember.
No.
I've done a few, but I really can't remember.
It's been an all right month, but my month of December is going to be my best ever yet. Even it won't be caching numbers-wise, but just because we've got this show coming up.
Yeah.
And listen to this show all the way through, because it's a great show. I'm really excited for it. So should we, instead of hyping it up, should we just get on
Let's just run it.
Let's roll.
Cool.
Are we live now?
We are live now. Okay, we are recording this show, and joining us all the way from Seattle.
Is it Seattle? Are you sure?
I am sure. Hang on a second. Chris, you're in Seattle, right?
Yep, right smack dab in the middle of Seattle.
So joining us right slap bang from the middle of Seattle at Geocaching HQ, as it says on his T-shirt, is Chris, also known as Rock Chalk. Chris, good evening and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be talking to you guys.
Oh, I think it's completely awesome. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Chris. Now, I can see you've got Geocaching HQ written across your T-shirt. On your left sleeve, is that a trackable?
Yes, that's my personal tracking code.
Let's see if we can sneak his arm around it. All of us,
yeah, you'll be... Could you turn to your left?
we might have to
you
log
spend the
you
whole
from...
time looking over here.
We might have to log you from the other side of the world.
Yeah,
technically we've met online now. This is the new meeting people.
That's true.
We're not allowed virtuals anymore, though, are we?
Oh no,
no. So
that'd be
don't
a question.
Know if we, don't know if we can virtual log that. Yeah, absolutely. So sorry, Chris. Tell us what you do for geocaching, for your awesome, awesome day job of geocaching.
Yeah, so I started here just a little over a year ago, and I came here to work on the community volunteer support team. So what my team does is work with community volunteers, whether they be mostly reviewers, but also translators and moderators for our website forums. So my team works with the volunteers to make sure that they have what they need to do what they do as efficiently as possible. We also handle appeals that come in from the community. And we also work with land managers. That's another thing that falls under our team. And work with geocaching organizations and groups, local and regional groups around the world. Very recently, I also took on the public relations role here. The person who had been doing it for many years moved on to a new position, and I had some of that in my background. So they said, hey, do you want to do this too? And I was like, yeah, sure, that sounds cool. And so now I get, part of me gets paid to talk about geocaching. So that's
talks to people
that's awesome.
Like us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you get paid to go out on your lunch break and get geocaches?
We are required to go caching for a few hours each month. So actually just yesterday, my team went for about 2 hours in the afternoon to find some relatively new caches, which I had just found over the weekend. So there was no need for me to go this time. But yeah, it's very common to hook up with another person here at work and go out and find some caches. It's, you know, I think as somebody who cached for a long time before I came to work here, I really liked when I heard that, because it tells me that the people who work here, even the ones who maybe don't come in with a lot of caching experience, are kind of still trying to keep their fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the game. And it helps them to better understand what people want from our products, and maybe what they don't like about the products. It's one thing for people like me and some of the other kind of hardcore cachers that work here to tell them that, but when they actually go out and experience it as a cacher themselves, I think that's really important.
Cool. How, before you joined geocaching and as a company itself, or Groundspeak, how many caches had you found roughly?
Before I came to work here, I was just under 10,000.
10,000?
That's how
that puts us to shame.
So I'm pretty serious. Yeah, I'm kind of, well, my wife would say serious isn't the right word. She'd use something a little more denigrating to describe me. But
obsessed. How many have you found in the year or so that you've been there then?
Oh, right now I'm just north of 13,000 now total that I've found. I actually, and it's kind of silly to say this, I actually have cached less since I moved here. And I think part of that is just because where I lived before, I was in Kansas, which is the very middle of the U.S., and it was really easy to go just about any place. I mean, you just get in the car and you can drive anywhere, whereas here I can only go so far west before I hit water. And then too, during the winter, going east is kind of tough because we have mountains just to the east of Seattle. But the other thing though is that there's a lot more chances to go hiking here for caches here in the Northwest. And so even though I don't necessarily find as many, it's still a great experience because I'm getting to go and have a new kind of caching experience than I had in my first 3 or 4 years when I was living in the Midwestern part of the U.S. So it's been awesome being out here and getting to go after different kinds of caches than I did before.
So, I mean, realistically, you are the ideal person that geocaching or Groundspeak want to employ, because you are that hardcore cacher. You've got your 10,000 point finds, and you are essentially, you are interested in the game, whether you're working for them or not. So you working for them, being paid to cache is just a bonus for you and them, really, is it?
Oh yeah, it was definitely a selling point when I interviewed for the job, that I had as much experience that I did. But you know, I also think it's important to have a wide range of experience levels here at the company, and there are people that come in that just know very little about geocaching, which is very good too, because you want to know what because for somebody in my position, I tend to forget what it was like when I first started, and I I tend to forget. Like, for instance, one of the first caches that I went to try to find was very close to my office, I remember, and I went looking for it, and I just couldn't. God, I'm looking all over. I'm searching around. I spent 20 minutes. I was like, I couldn't find it. I came back to the office. I started reading more, and I realized it was a virtual cache. And so, you know, you forget that it's easy to have experiences like that when you first start out. And so when we're building products and when we're improving products, I think it is good to have that range of experiences. And we definitely do have, like, for instance, Mountain Bike, who you guys are probably familiar with. John has found, I think, over 15,000 caches, and he's been around since the game started. And there's other people who are at or around 10,000. So we definitely have some hardcore players. And then we have folks that are much more casual about it. And to have that range of experience levels, because our community has a range of experience levels, I think that's a really good thing.
No, yeah, I was just thinking about it while you were talking about it. And if you've got the complete newbie there that can come along and say, hey, I hate this about the app, or what do I do with this? And it might trigger something for the rest of you to think, well, hang on, we haven't explained that very well. Perhaps there's a better way that we can do it.
Absolutely. But yeah, because it's, you know, for people like us who have been playing a long time, there's certain things that maybe you've just gotten used to them, or maybe there's something in the app or on the website that when you first started, maybe you didn't love it, but now it's just part of your workflow and you just know how to deal with it. So when you get a fresh set of eyes who can kind of say, hey, what about this thing? And you're like, oh, I don't even think about it anymore because it's just so part, it's just ingrained in me.
Well, a good example of that, we had a question from Team Minestrone, who actually asked, could we ask you if there's the possibility to add a blue DNF smiley or frowny to the mapping page, because they say it would make it easier to recognize caches that they visited previously and then failed to find, and it would help them visually monitor where they've been previously but didn't actually find what they were looking for. Is that something that geocaching is looking to implement, or is that something that's a possibility in future app or website updates?
I think it's something that's a possibility. I don't know. I don't think it's on the immediate roadmap, but that's certainly one of those things that when I see it, I think, oh yeah, I could see some value for that kind of a thing. Like I said, I don't think that's imminent, but it's one of those things that our product team tends to have a whole list of possible things that they're thinking about adding in there. And I would imagine that's one that is, you know, certainly something that they've thought about. And if they haven't, I'll make sure that Minestrone's thought gets to them.
And do the development team and the people who develop the website, the game, the app, do they rely heavily on user saying, you know, I think this would be a really good idea? How do you gauge what's a good idea and what's a bad idea? Is it if you get 1,000 emails, is that something that we'll look at for a future part of the app, or does it have to hit a certain criteria, or how do they decide?
No, sure. If we hear a lot about something, then that tends to just human nature. You say, well, we're hearing a lot about it. That must be an issue, but there's a lot of different ways that the product team solicits feedback. One of the most effective things they do is what they call innovation games, and I think there's something about that. If people go to this week's blog post, I think that was talked about in this week's email, where they've been going to various events, and we did this at Block Party as well, and essentially, what they do with these innovation games is they take a number of features that are just being considered, and so that each feature has its own little slip of paper, and they have a group of people, and they say, okay, here's all the features that you could consider implementing, and here's how much it would cost to implement them, and here's the amount of money that you have, and put them in the order that you want to you think they ought to appear in. So it makes people say, okay, you know, here's how I would budget for it, here's the things that are most important. And so we run those games over and over in various places, whether it be in Europe, here in the U.S., different states in the U.S., different countries in Europe and in Canada and wherever. And then you start to get a little bit of a better picture, at least as good of a picture as we can get, of not only which features are most important to people, but also it rather than just say, I want this, I want all these different things, it changes your paradigm to where you have to say, okay, there's actually there's a finite amount of resources here. How would I apply those resources in a way that gets me the features that are most important to me? Because we as consumers, I think, tend to say, well, they ought to just add these 100 things and then it'll be awesome. And you tend to forget, well, we're not Google. We don't have several 100,000 employees. So we've got a limited number of resources. And how can we apply those resources in the way that will make the most people happy? So, if you ever are at a mega event and you get to see those innovation games in action, it's pretty cool because it makes people really think about it, as opposed to just as you'll see in social media or in various forums, it's easy to just say, I want all of this stuff, and not have to really think it through and say, okay, here's how we would go about doing that.
Yeah, sure. Lovely. Right, should we have a bit of music?
Yes, but before we do, I just want to ask one very quick question. How many people are employed at Geocaching HQ?
Oh, that was going to be one of my future questions.
Sorry, I want to know now.
Okay.
We'll give you both credit for the question. There are between 70 and 80 people total, and most of them are here at the headquarters building in Fremont, which is, if you're familiar with the Space Needle in downtown Seattle, as some people are because it's such a landmark, it's maybe 3 or 4 miles north of there. And then we have a handful of people who work at our warehouse, which is almost right at the Space Needle. And that's where, if you order things from Shop Geocaching, that's where those things come from. So the vast majority of us are here. And I would say 40% or so of the people here are developers. And then the rest of us are spread out amongst the other departments.
And you guys and your team are really, if you like, the face of geocaching, because you're the ones that get involved with talking to people like me as a player of the game. So,
yeah, I mean, certainly those of us that are on the community volunteer support side and on the community team, we're the ones that are answering questions that come in via the website. The community team is the team that's handling social media and answering tweets and answering Facebook questions and things of that nature. So we tend to be the ones that interact the most with the community, which is one of the reasons that I wanted to do this kind of a job, is that I love the game so much that I want to be as involved with it as possible. And so that's why being part of the group that I'm in was so attractive to me coming here.
Right. Very quick piece of music, and then we'll be right back.
Awesome.
I must say, we are completely honoured. Chris has just told us that we are the first podcast that he is on.
Outside North America.
Outside North America? Have you been on one of the US podcasts?
I have been, but again, yeah, outside of this continent, you guys are the
yes!
first. So I'm very excited to be going international here.
You're excited about it.
Excited about this, because what I'd really like to do, Chris, is get you on every sort of couple of months, few months, just to get the gen, get the inside knowledge, if you like, find out what's going on in Groundspeak.
I'd be glad to do it. In fact, what I'd really like to do is let's get my boss to okay me doing these in person, and we can just do it in the UK.
Yeah, I think I've got a better idea. How about your boss agrees to fly us to Seattle so we can come meet you?
So we can see the HQ and we can look at
the HQ. How about I go there and you come to Seattle and we'll do this from, I'll come to your room, you come to my room, and we'll do it that way.
Sounds awesome.
Works for me. I'll do that. I'll leave you a beer on the sofa, on the table, mate, all right?
You are aware that we can see the sun in the background there, and it's pouring it down with rain here, aren't you?
I think you're maybe the window looks better than it is. It's not pouring down rain at the moment, although it's supposed to later today.
Okay.
It's not sunny today, so
I'm sure it was sunnier than it was here, to be honest. We had wind.
Yeah, we've had wind, rain, about 10°C, which is what, 40 something Fahrenheit.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like Seattle.
Well, again, we'll just have to swap places and find out.
Right. I'm totally fine with that.
Who's the boss, by the way?
Who's my boss?
Yeah.
He's ultimately for something like that, I'd probably have to go to Brian.
Does he have more or less fines than you?
Brian just got to 1,000, which was a big thing for him. But you got to understand with Brian is, especially in the early days, he found a lot of caches that he didn't log. And then the other thing is, if you ever have a chance to meet Brian, and I hope you do because he's awesome, especially when he goes to big events, people want to spend time with him and want to say hello, and he loves meeting people. And so he often doesn't get a chance to actually go and do very much caching. There was a mega event, very near Block Party here, in August. And so he was literally the day after Block Party, the Ape Tunnel mega event. And, so the Ape Tunnel is something like a mile long tunnel that you go through, and then you get to the other side and you find a couple caches and then you come back. And so I remember when I went into the tunnel, I saw Brian there talking with a group of people, taking pictures and all that stuff. I went all the way through In fact, I was with a couple of British cashers doing it. We went to the other side and came back, and Brian was standing in the same place talking to people, taking pictures. So so when I say he has 1,000 fines, I've heard a couple of people have responded by saying, "Oh, like he's been doing it for so long, why does he only have 1,000?" And I'm like, "Well, it's not because he doesn't let you
stand chatting."
He's very chatty, but he loves caching. And if you ever get a chance to meet him, if you come to HQ or at a mega, I hope you do get a chance to meet him, because it's working here for him and Jeremy over the last year has really been a great experience. They're really great people who have such a love for the game and such a vested interest in making sure the game is, you know, goes forward in a really positive way. So as somebody who was a cacher for, like I said, a long time before I came here, it was neat to come here and actually find out that the people who are at the head of this company are really good people who have the game's interest at their very heart.
Did you, when you first arrived, did you virtual nudge somebody and go, "Psst, that's Jeremy Irish. That's Jeremy. We're not worthy.
You know, I really didn't. I know some people, especially those who have been playing maybe a lot longer, Jeremy and Brian are kind of celebrities because they're so well known among the community. But they're just, I remember one of my first days at work here, we were having pizza after work or something, and there's a ping pong table here at HQ where you go and take a break during the day or whatever. And I remember that we were out in the kitchen, there was pizza, and Brian was standing there and he had a ping pong paddle in his back pocket. And I remember thinking, well, I've never seen a boss with a ping pong paddle. I said, I think I'm in a different kind of a place here. And we've had many thrilling ping pong matchups over the past several months. So they're very neat guys and a lot of fun to spend time with. So I wasn't really pinching myself.
I have to say, I think I'm in the wrong job.
I'm in the wrong country.
They get paid to go geocaching and then paid to play ping pong. Any other perks, you know, that you want to make us jealous of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are my favorite couple right there.
The soda machine's free.
But yeah, no, having, like I said, for somebody like myself who loves geocaching, to be able to do it every day for work, to be able to have it be part of your day-to-day life is it's what any of us wants, you know, to be able to do something that you love for your job. So it's a pretty cool thing.
So throughout, you call it a game. Do you consider it a game, a hobby, a sport? What is the general sort of the consensus of geocaching or ground speed? What is geocaching in that respect?
Oh, I mean, I think it probably depends on your definition of those words. But I think for me personally and the folks that I talk to here, it's, you know, it certainly is a game.
Obsession, is that?
And I think it's definitely, I think it's, hopefully it's a hobby for all of us. But I certainly do it a lot more than any other hobby that I have. So I guess you could sometimes call it an obsession. But hopefully for all of us, it's a, you know, a fun game or a fun hobby. And I haven't heard sport used quite as much, but I would imagine some folks may see it that way.
I know a lot of people use it as a fitness thing. They'll go out and do a 10-mile walk rather than sitting in front of the TV for an afternoon. You know.
Yeah, and that's for me personally. That I was a competitive distance runner when I was younger, and so for me there I have lost track of how many times that I'll say, oh, I'm going to do a quick, you know, do my run for the day and get a geocache while I'm at it. Or I've had a couple of times where I've been on vacation with my wife and she'll drop me off at the start of a footpath, a long footpath, and she'll pick me up at the end of it. And she'll go shopping or something in between. So it's a win-win situation there.
Cool. So over the last, two, maybe 3 months, we've been asking our listeners to submit questions primarily in audio format for us to submit to you, which I believe LJ did, and you're aware of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is I want to run each question and then get your opinion and your answer to it. Now, the first one is from a cacher called Richard, who's also known as Life Chooser.
He's a regular listener to our show.
He is a regular. We've actually been
very regular.
We've been out caching with him as well. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's not far
so
off.
If you are able to run the audio.
Right. This is going to sound very professional. Run audio.
Hello, Colin and LJ. This is Life Chooser. I've got a question that I'd like to put to Groundspeak, and it concerns that old chestnut of virtuals and whether they should come back or not. Now, the debate's been going on a long time, and it always follows the same pattern. On the one hand, when virtuals were banned, reviewers were being swamped by people who wanted to put one in a tree in the middle of a wood that was of no interest whatsoever. It made people lazy, and it made too much work for the reviewers. On the other hand, the virtuals that do exist are some of the most popular and most favourite caches out there. And with some places that only a virtual can be placed, such as national parks in America or museums. I wonder if there's a way around this by allowing people to create new virtuals, but in limited numbers. The way that I've thought of is by allowing people to spend favourite points that they've earned on their hides. So a really good hider could spend 100 of their favourite points and allow them to create one virtual cache. This means that virtuals will come back, but only in a small way, and only hidden by the best hiders. I think this would be a great idea, because otherwise virtual caches might die out entirely, and that would be a real shame. And there are also places that I think virtuals need to be where there aren't one already, but you can't place a physical box. What do you think?
I don't see virtuals coming back. I hesitate to use the official position of never, just because somebody will quote that someday, and if they did, and say. But the feeling now is that they wouldn't come back. There's a lot of reasons that they went away, and some people tend to focus only on what they remember as the reasons. And then the other issue with, and I'm one that loves virtuals. I've found a few hundred of them, and I love them as much as anybody. But again, the ones that are remaining now are the good ones. And the reason that a lot of us look at them and say, why can't I put, these are so great. You know, they're taking me to great locations and I'm seeing great things. Why can't we do them anymore? And they don't realize that, the ones that have gone away over the past, gosh, I guess 12 or 13 years if it's been that long since they were grandfathered, it's taken a long time to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And so you're left with these great locations, and you wonder why we can't do them anymore, and you forget the reasons that they went away that are still valid reasons. But again, the answer is no, they're not coming back. But who knows what happens in the future. If there's some idea like was just presented, maybe there's some idea that none of us have thought of before that could somehow work. But we haven't seen that yet.
Let's just clarify this before we go too much further. Virtuals were grandfathered 12 or 13 years ago. Is that what you said? Now, the game's only been running since 2001.
I want to say it was 2000. I should know this off the top of my head, and I don't, but it's been at least 10 years. We can at least say that.
And people are still going on about virtuals. So I think that's always going to be the hot topic, isn't it? There's just no way that we're going to get away from that, unfortunately.
Well, and part of it is, it's human nature to kind of want what you can't have is one thing. They become more attractive. What's funny is when you talk to people who were around when they went away, there wasn't much of an outcry over it. When they went away, people were like, okay, well, they weren't as beloved as they are now. And like I said, that's, I think, for two reasons. One, because you can't put them out anymore, so naturally you want to have them again because you can't have them. And then number two, because what's left are the good ones. They're the ones that you're saying, well, this was a lot of fun, and I don't know why I can't keep doing this. So, but as new players come in, like I was 4 years ago, I wanted to hide a virtual cache until I knew they were grandfathered. And then once you learn more of the history about it, I personally tended to say, okay, I can see why it happened. And,
But there's also other options that you could do. You could do a Where I Go. You could do an Earth cache if it's in an appropriate location for it. So you don't need the physical container for those.
Yeah. And that's what we usually encourage people to do is either, try to make those waypoints part of a multi-cache or, try to make it part of a multi or as you say, Where I Go is often a possibility. Could be a first stage or could be incorporated into a mystery cache. There's a lot of ways that you can still incorporate those really cool virtual waypoints, into another cache type without needing it to be a virtual cache.
Just without promoting other sports games, hobbies, whatever you want to call them, have you ever heard of Cyta?
I don't think. How do you spell that?
S-I-G-H-T-E-R, Cyta.
I don't think I have. No.
It's an app that we sort of accidentally discovered on the iOS store. I don't know if it's on Android.
I've got no idea.
I don't know, but we found it on the Apple store anyway, and it sort of incorporates virtuals where you attend a GPS location and you have to take a picture of what's at that location. So there's other options out there, I think, that, and as you say, encouraging people to put Where I Go's or Earth caches at these locations is a good way of sort of still bringing those points or bringing people to those points without having a virtual cache there. So.
Yeah. And then obviously waymarking was something that's out there, but I think for those of us that are serious, players feel like it maybe wasn't incorporated as well into the main website for geocaching.com as it could have been. So that's another option. So yeah, as you said, there's a number of ways to still take people to those cool places. And
cool.
Right. Just one before you move on. One that we mentioned there was I've forgotten already.
This is why you need a notepad.
Yeah, no, I've got a notepad sat there. It's got my cup of tea on it.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, that's very helpful.
Where I Go. One of the things that a lot of people complain about is the compatibility of the cartridges with either the iOS or the Android apps. Now, I believe that they aren't official Groundspeak apps anyway.
Yeah, that's true. They're not official Groundspeak apps.
Is there any plans anywhere down the pipeline to sort of produce an official app for a Where I Go, or is it just something that's ticking along in the background?
No, I don't think it's something that Groundspeak is necessarily going to take on, but I will say that Where I Go hasn't dropped out of our consciousness. We know that, and there's people like me who own a couple of Where I Go's, and I'm knocking on doors here saying, hey, what about Where I Go? Because we know that it's a something that people are very passionate about. It definitely has, for sure, a cult following. but I think even more than just a cult following. And so we're looking at where I go and what could be done with it down the road. There's a lot of options on the table for that. It's not moving as quickly as I think we being players would like to see it move. I mean, it's been in beta for, you know, something like 7 or 8 years. But I personally hope that there's some movement on that in the fairly near future.
Oh, it'd be nice to see. I mean, I've done a few Where I Goes, and I've really enjoyed them.
We had a good fun on that one out in
it was Richard Life Chooses, yeah, actually. Yeah, out in Romsey.
Yeah, Romsey, yeah, way, yeah.
Not far from where LJ lives.
Yeah. Just out of curious, how do you cache? Do you cache with a phone and an app, or do you use a dedicated GPS or a bit of both, or how do you sort of choose to play?
A little bit of both. I tend to use a dedicated GPS, especially because once you get out of Seattle, you can get out of cell phone range pretty quickly when you get into the mountains and all that stuff. If I'm just caching just on the go, then I tend to use the app because I haven't loaded, you know, things into my GPS. But if I've planned a trip and I have the turn-by-turn directions on my GPS and I've got all the cache listings loaded in, that's how I prefer to do it. I know that in the intro app, if it hasn't already been introduced, it will be the turn-by-turn directions. And so once that's hooked up, that's going to make that app a lot more attractive to me. But until we add offline functionality to the new app, I'm still going to be, and I use offline with the paid app as well. But for me, paid app versus if I'm doing out of cell coverage caching, I prefer to use the dedicated GPS as opposed to the paid app.
No, I absolutely agree with that. I much prefer my GPS. I've got a GPS Map 62S or something like that, and I much prefer using that. But if I'm just out and about and if I'm urban and I wonder if there's any caches nearby, it's really handy just to pull the phone out and say, right, what's close by? But I tend to reach for the full app rather than the intro. I still tend to reach for the full app rather than the intro.
Yeah, what's your actual GPS of choice? What is your one that you're using at the moment?
I use a Garmin Oregon GPS. I think I have the 600 right now. I think I had the 450 maybe, and I upgraded about a year and a half ago. But the newer one doesn't have Where I Go capability on it, so I still hold on to the old one. In fact, I was out with one of the other lackeys a couple weekends ago, and we did a Where I Go just west of Seattle. And so I still hold on to that old GPS unit because it can still play the Where I Go cartridges.
Do you guys still refer to yourselves as lackeys, or do you actually have a different name for yourselves these days?
Internally, it's more we still refer to each other as lackeys. That's something that I'm still trying to get a handle on, honestly, if I'm being real honest with you, is what we're supposed to be saying outside of the company. I always liked, before I came to work here, I always liked when I heard that they were called lackeys. I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of self-deprecating in a way, because I think it just kind of, especially internally, you know, Brian's a lackey, I'm a lackey, everybody's a lackey. And so it's just kind of a way to say we're all... It's kind of all hands on deck here. You know, we're all willing to do anything. Nobody's better than anybody else. So yeah, internally we definitely do, but I think externally there's been more of a change to refer to ourselves as HQers or H, I don't know what, but I think lackey has a better ring to it, but I'm sure somebody smarter than me has figured out.
Perhaps we could call our listeners to say, what should the Groundspeak lackeys call themselves instead of lackey?
Do Groundspeak use the term muggles?
Sure. I mean, absolutely.
Do you use muggles as a term for non-geocachers over there in general? I don't know if it's a UK thing or not.
No. Yeah, I mean, if you're out caching and somebody's sitting right next to where you're trying to go, I would say, oh, there's a darn muggle in my way. You know, I can't. So yeah, that's how I would, it's easier than saying, oh, there's a non-geocacher, yeah, somebody who's not aware of my game. We just call them muggles.
Cool.
Dave, DeBear,
Yes.
Refers to his wife as his snuggle muggle.
Ooh.
Because she doesn't play the game, but she knows what it is, and she's related to him, so she's his snuggle muggle.
I'm getting this creepy image of Dave now.
Well, Dave with his big beard. Right, we have another question.
We do.
This one is from Lucy, and you know, I've never figured out what Lucy's caching name is.
Rapunzel? Yeah, Rapunzel.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Would you like to load the question?
Yes,
it says, here's my question for the Groundspeak interview.
I think she introduces herself as well. Because I've always called her Lucy Melon, but it's not Melon, it's Melon, I think. So I feel a bit bad now.
I'll tell you what, press the play button and we'll see.
Let's go.
Hello, UK GCPC and Groundspeak person. I am Rapunzel, or Lucy Melon. My question is, why has the new search function been changed so that it zooms out to a million miles away when you view it on a map? It's so annoying, as when you're searching in a location, you want to see that location, not an overview of a large radius around it. And in relation to this, when will a search of over 30 miles be available? Thank you.
Okay.
Wow.
That was very efficient. Forward. Yeah, it was like, why are you not doing this?
Do this now!
What's the sort of official...
The first part of the question I will have to check on, because that you guys gave me an idea of some of the questions, and I did some research on some of them, but that one I didn't see, so I'll have to look into that. The second part about the 30 miles, when we released the new advanced search... the reason for the 30-mile limit was that as you expand that, the bigger radius takes a bigger hit on the database every time that somebody runs a search. And so we started it at 30 with the intention of eventually expanding that out. So that is part of the plan, that eventually you'll be able to do more than 30 as we get a better idea for what kind of a load these searches are taking on the system. But then I think probably people have already figured it out that if you leave the search box blank and search by, here in the U.S., if you search by state, for instance, you can get results for, like, for instance, all the state of Washington, if you leave that field blank as opposed to doing the 30-mile radius. So that can be helpful for a lot of people. But if you are, like I used to be before I moved here, I was literally on the border between two U.S. states. I lived between Kansas and Missouri. And so doing just a search of Kansas versus just a search of Missouri, that wasn't as helpful to me.
Sure, because you'd only see one side.
Exactly. Whereas now I live in since I live in Washington, I can just search the whole state by leaving that search field empty. So it works great for me, but we totally understand that people want to see that 30-mile number expand, and it will over time.
I suppose you've got to feed the hamsters a little bit more if it's going to hit the database that hard, though, haven't you?
It sort of runs into another question, that when you run a pocket query, it gives you a results of up to 1,000 results. Mm-hmm. Is it planned or is it a thought by geocaching? Because I know from some people, if you're driving A to B, you haven't planned a route as such. You want maybe to know. Let's say, I don't know if you've ever been to the UK. Cornwall's quite a big area that is the whole of the southwest, basically, is all Devon and Cornwall. If you're going down there, you can easily travel over sort of a couple of hundred miles, and 1,000 pocket query just will not cover that space easy enough. Is there plans to make the pocket queries a little bit more sort of user friendly, or to expand those from 1,000 upwards?
The plan is for pocket query is to make pocket queries obsolete someday by building out the search function, building out advanced search, and then of course adding in the ability to download those results to where you'll get everything you need and more from pocket queries from advanced search. So no, there aren't any plans to change or expand pocket queries, but the plan is that advanced search will get to the point, and the downloads from that will get to the point where you won't need pocket queries anymore.
In the meantime, what you can do is caches along a route.
Yeah, I struggle to do it, if I'm honest.
I think it's something that we need to look yeah. into some more, because I have used it. I've gone from, like, here up to the north of the country.
But then you get to a diver and you get to, like, the A303's block, so you decide to take the A whatever and go off, and you end up, your pocket
query
doesn't...
Yeah, but then you get back on your route as quick as you can anyway.
Yeah, do you, though? Or do you think, oh, I'll go for that cache over there? You end up...
Yeah, I'll just drive 40 miles off to the right here to get this one that happens.
Oh, it's happened.
No, I totally see what you were saying there, because I've certainly planned very long road trips, and I'll do one cache along a route, pocket query from this town to this town, and then do another one from that town to the next town, and you keep kind of building them on top of each other. It's not a necessarily an intuitive setup the way it is now. So hopefully that'll improve.
Because what I like, and is coming more in, it wasn't available even up to sort of a year and a half ago, really, is this live caching. So when you see yourself on the map, and as the map moves, things, caches are appearing live time around you, and that's something that the intro app has brought in and started to develop. My sort of concern is that that's not going to work if you're offline, is it? It's not going to
this
bring
is quite,
those
yeah,
in.
I mean, if you haven't got the cell coverage, then no, it's not going to work.
No.
But
there's going to have to be a way of saving them offline somehow and storing them on either your phone or your GPS, because ultimately if you get rid of pocket queries, how do you then get your GPX file to put onto your Garmin device or onto your Magellan or however?
We're kind of discussing this between ourselves, Chris, and obviously you could answer this much better than I could, but the way that I see that it works is if you run the advanced search, there's going to be a button at the bottom that says download these results, which will give you the GPX file.
So it creates a pocket query then?
Yeah, no, it creates the GPX.
Okay. Which, yeah, so is the product of a pocket query.
The pocket query creates the GPX file. So rather than the pocket query doing it, the advanced search will do it.
Okay, cool.
Is that about right, Chris?
Yeah, I think that's a fairly accurate assessment of where we're going. I don't know exactly what the files will look like or where the button will be or any of that stuff. But yes, the idea is that you'll be able to run your search and then download those results in much the same way that you may have used Pocket Query in the past. So that's what the ultimate goal would be.
Because my want for a physical GPX file for things like apps like Nextcache rely on having a GPX file, mm-hmm. don't they? They rely on a product from it. So
absolutely.
As long as you can still get that, I'm happy.
You're going to need the GPX file for your GPS anyway.
Yeah, sure.
So however it's created, you're still going to need that to be able to download it to your handheld GPSR to be able to go out caching. So,
and I'll be honest, a few years ago, Chris, when, I don't know how long I've been caching,
too long.
3 or 4 years?
Too long, yeah.
A bit long, maybe. Anyway,
maybe.
Yeah, a few years. And one thing, when Colin talked me into starting geocaching,
my fault.
I didn't have a clue. I could not figure out pocket queries for ages, could I?
No.
And I came round here and Colin sat down and talked me through it and talked me through it again and again. And I don't know what it was. I just couldn't get my head around creating a pocket query.
I mean, initially all we did for you was we sat here at my computer and we set the pocket query up on LJ's account, and I just left him to it because he just, no matter how many times we talked through it, it just wouldn't click for him. I think since then it has, hasn't it? Because
I signed up for a geocaching account 3 or 4 years before actually finding a geocache,
yep.
because
me too.
I picked it up and I went, we don't know what I'm doing. So I sort of went, I'll maybe come back to that one day. And then I did, luckily for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Right. Have you got another one lined up, or are we going to have a quick bit of music?
Let's have a quick bit of music.
Chris, thank you very much for staying with us.
He's getting paid. He's happy.
I know he's getting paid. And he's got his bottle of water. And he's got his cool T-shirt on.
Yeah, we want cool T-shirts.
I want to be able to reach through the screen and grab that T-shirt off his back.
We want UK geocaching podcast ones.
I'm sure we can do something like that.
Let's do it. Do it. And we'll send one to Chris.
Absolutely. So the next time he's on our show, we can see him.
Yeah. Right, we have got a question from, I have no idea because I'm
that looks like it says Rich Lay.
Rich Lay. So
now, he's one of our members of the Geocaching Association of Great Britain. He's just been voted back onto the committee.
For do you know what? It makes sense, because at the start of his audio, you'll hear that he plugs it a little bit.
There you go.
Here we go.
Have you caught up with the GAGB, Chris?
Yes. Familiar with that. Yeah.
Cool. Go on in.
Should we hear from Rich?
Do it.
Okay.
Hi, this is Rich Lay, a proud serving member of the Geocaching Association of Great Britain, but now an even prouder chairman of the committee to bring the 10th anniversary of the UK mega event back to Yorkshire in 2018, where we look forward to welcoming people from geocaching headquarters and from all around the world. But all I would like to know today is this: how are the team at headquarters currently thinking about challenge caches? We heard a while ago on Sunny and Sandy's podcast that the desire was for them to return. Is that still the case? Thanks for now.
It's very fortuitous that he should mention that with the email that came out this week from HQ.
Well, further to it.
Oh, have we got a...
Further to it, can I now point you to Bingo the Bounty Hunter's audio, which I'll run right now.
Hello, UK Geocaching Podcast, and hello, geocaching.com. This is Matt from Team Bingo the Bounty Hunter. So my question is this. It's about challenge caches. How close are you to making a decision about the future of challenge caches? And is there the possibility that they could come forward in future as a brand new geocache type? Thanks very much. Bye.
So it seems that as much as the virtual caches are always a hot topic, the challenge caches are a hot topic as well at the moment.
This is a massive topic because, as you say, we got an email about 5 hours ago.
Well, no, the weekly email from Groundspeak that came out mentioned the new survey that you guys are wanting to run. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Sure, absolutely. The next step in the process was always the survey, and it took us longer to put together than we had anticipated. You know, we started the moratorium in April and had the user insights forum immediately when the moratorium started. And we got such a large amount of feedback from the user insights forum that it took a lot longer to go through it than we were planning. And so, but we wanted to give it the time that it deserved and make sure that we read through everything, which we absolutely did, and use that information as well as information from reviewer feedback as well, and try to put together the next step, the survey, where we could gain more detailed insights to what people like and maybe what some of their pain points are, and their reaction to some solutions that have been brought up over time. And so, as you said, we just released that yesterday. It's been a phenomenal response thus far. It's funny because I found myself somewhat surprised by the level of response to the User Insights Forum. And again, I find myself surprised to the level of response to the survey. But it's fantastic. And, you know, what we really wanted to do with both the Insights Forum and with the survey is truly to get feedback from the community. Challenge caches started with the community. It wasn't something that HQ put out there. It started from the community, and we know they are valuable to people. I personally, I think at last check, I had found over 1,000 challenge caches. So I love challenge caches, and I want to see them continue. But there are valid issues with them that in order for them to continue, we need to address those issues. But we wanted the community to be a huge part of that. And so that was the reason for the forum. That's the reason for the survey. And it's open for 3 weeks. And hopefully people listening to this, if you haven't already, if it's a subject that you have any interest in, that you'll go there and make your voice heard.
And can listeners and people get to that through just geocaching.com's website or Groundspeak's website?
If you don't have the email, I think the best thing to do is go to our forums, go to forums.groundspeak.com, and we have the link posted a couple of different places. I know it's in the announcements section of the forums. And we also posted it in the general discussions section as well. So there's a couple different places there that you can get to it. And I think it's also on the geocaching blog this week. So there's a couple different places if you missed the email or if you accidentally deleted it or whatever. A couple of different ways for you to get to that link.
I'll put a link to the blog post on geocaching.com in the show notes as well. So if people want to refer to it from there.
So hit our website. Absolutely. And you can hit
our website is ukgcpodcast.com.
I'm glad you said that because I can never remember what our website is.
It's really difficult, isn't it? It's ukgcpodcast.com.
Yeah. Well, it's because, no, because it used to be, did it used to be different?
No. It's been that. Ever since I started this show 5 years ago, it has been the same.
Okay, my bad.
I know we get it wrong ourselves fairly regularly, but no, it has always been the same email address.
Challenge caches, then. I started geocaching as, I think, challenge caches went out of the window. Am I right, Chris, in thinking that at the time there was an app, wasn't there? A specific dedicated challenges app? Is that right?
Well, you're thinking of challenges, which are different from challenge caches. And I think you could talk to people here who were involved with challenges, and they would say that was maybe an unfortunate way to refer to them because it led to a lot of confusion. It certainly did for me.
It's confused me even now. Yeah.
Challenges were around for such a limited amount of time that there's confusion between what those are and what challenge caches are. But they are two different things. And I think challenges were around for a year, or maybe even less than a year. Challenge caches have been around, I think the first one was 2005 or so, 2004, which was a DeLorme challenge in California here in the U.S. was the first one. So they've been around quite a long time.
Cool. We have got...
Right. Before you do that one...
I'm glad you said that because I had a brain fart then and I completely forgot where I was going. So you carry on. Go on.
What we're going to do, okay, is we are going to read this question. Now, Chris has...
Wait, no, you are because I can't
because
read
it's,
and
it's
talk.
It's my question. Yeah. We're going to get Chris's feedback on this one because it was a controversial one that's just been announced fairly recently. It was picked up by the Geocaching Podcast guys last week. Then we're going to play some music. Then we're going to talk about some other stuff. Then we're going to play some more music. And then we're going to have Rock Chalk back on as our cacher of the month.
You're making this sound like we have this plan.
We do have a plan.
Okay.
Chris, do we not look like we have a plan? I mean, come on.
You look very organized to me.
You're a good liar.
Thanks, Chris.
So then, ask this question comes from Cole.
This is my question. On episode 427 of the Geocaching Podcast last week, they were mentioning that the reviewers are now expected to identify themselves in real life after a few months of being in the role as a reviewer. However, lots of the older reviewers aren't. Now, one of the things that the guys on the GC podcast suggested was perhaps it's because there's some of the older reviewers might not want to reveal who they are because there might be some bad blood against them or they've upset a few people. And if they find out who these people are in real life, they're going to go along and lynch them or something like that. Now, I don't believe it's anything as nefarious as that, but why the requirement to get the newer reviewers to reveal who they are within a few months once they're settled into the role?
What we find is that what tends to be best for the community is that players know who the local reviewers are. And what we tend to find is, and what reviewers have told us in general, is that once people know who they are and you put a face with a name, it tends to lead to much more productive conversations. And so as we've had that feeling develop over time, we decided that one of the expectations of the volunteer reviewers would be that after a certain amount of time, that they would reveal their identity to the community, and then it'll be a really positive thing. But that we've had reviewers who have been reviewing for a very long time, and that wasn't part of the expectation when they volunteered their time to be doing this, and so therefore we don't think it's right to impose an expectation on somebody who's been doing it a certain way for a very long amount of time. So we still encourage all reviewers, no matter how long they've been around, to have their identity public to the community. But it's now going forward with people who are coming on, where that's part of the expectation right out of the gate, that here's the list of things that are expected of a volunteer reviewer, and that's one of the things. And if that isn't something that you're comfortable with, then maybe it's not going to work out.
Choose against it then.
Yeah, but again, even reviewers, and this happens occasionally, that a reviewer who has been not known to the community will unveil their identity. It happened a couple of times just recently over here in the U.S. longtime reviewers, and it tends to be that either a lot of the community has already figured it out, because that it tends to be a guessing game among players that, oh, I wonder who this is, or I wonder who that is. But then it tends to be a very positive thing. It's a lot easier to throw stones at a person when you don't know them, when they're just you. I'm sure you guys see this in online message boards.
Oh, and absolutely.
The comments section of news stories. You see people that are making terrible comments because there is no accountability. Their name isn't behind it. So what we, and I'm not saying that, obviously I'm not directing that at reviewers. I'm saying that once you know who a person really is, as a player, for instance, we see, and this doesn't happen a lot, but we do see people that will make terrible comments about a review, where they'll say, oh, I can't believe that they wouldn't publish this, and they're a this and they're a that, and they call them names. But if you know who that person is, and you know that, hey, I might see them at an event next week, you tend to be a lot more civilized.
It makes them a human, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It makes them a human being. And you also, what reviewers have found, the ones who have made their identities known, is they tend to get a lot more complimentary comments as well, because people see them and they thank you for everything that you do for our game, because the amount of time that they put into the game is that they give to the community is stunning.
Oh, it's huge.
It's just amazing. And I knew that before I started working here, but then when I became part of the community volunteer support team, it's absolutely phenomenal the amount of time that they give to our game and to us as community members. So I think it will be a really positive thing, and so that's kind of some of the background behind it.
No, that's cool. I mean, yeah, just to go back to something that you said about the amount of time that they give, if you look at somebody like Professor Xavier, who's our local reviewer, he caches as Mario McTavish, he works a full-time job, he publishes caches, he went, I think, 1,500 days consecutive fines or something ridiculous like that.
And he publishes all the time.
Absolutely.
If I go back through my emails right now, I can guarantee you that he's published something in the last few days.
Yeah.
In fact, there you go. Friday.
No, he's done more recently than that. I've had one yesterday and today.
New multi-cache there.
By Professor Xavier. But he's also posting regularly on Geocaching UK, on the GAGB groups, on the local Hampshire, Dorset, Beds, Bucks, Hearts, London groups. Because people know that Ed is Professor Xavier and he is the reviewer, they will tend to take his opinion more seriously than if it's just some random bloke on the internet spouting. I can kind of see where you're coming from with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think before we hit the next topic, we should have some music, because I've got a funny feeling this one might be a little bit of a chat.
Right, we are suitably rested.
You've had a cup of tea and a wee.
I've got a cup of tea and I've had a wee, and Chris has been off to use the restroom. I don't know what he did there, but he's been off to use the restroom.
I had a wee.
You had a wee.
I'm going to start saying that now. We don't say that enough here.
I had a wee.
U.S. We don't say I had a wee, but I love it. I think I'm going to.
That must be a British thing, but that's I use that every day.
Excuse me, I need a wee.
I'm going for a wee.
Yeah. Right,
I'm going to see if I can get it to catch on here or not. I don't know if I'll be able to do, but I'm going to see.
Hashtag I'm going for a wee.
Yeah. I want you to see how many Britishisms you can sneak into
the next blog.
Into your conversations with your colleagues and see how many they notice. Yeah, instead of calling them pants, call them trousers. Excuse me, I need to go and change my trousers.
Oh, yeah, call it a toilet instead of a restroom, because we call it a toilet, don't we?
Yeah.
Or you guys call it... Is there a difference? I was always wanting to ask someone. Is there a difference between a restroom and a bathroom?
No, same thing.
Do you have baths in your bathroom at work, then?
No. But... I would tend to say restroom if I'm at work. I would say I'm going to go use the restroom. But I think they tend to be used interchangeably, even if there's no bath in the room, which, yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, you should. But I don't know that I'm resting in the room either. I'm there to do something.
You're busy.
I'm not there to take a nap or something. So I don't know that restroom is exact. Although some people do use it to rest, I guess. So I don't know.
This proves.
I think take a wee is a much better thing to say because it's describing what I'm going to be doing.
You're not going to take a wee. You're going to have a wee.
Have a wee.
Have a wee.
Yeah, you can't take a wee.
Better.
You have a wee, or you give a wee.
This is important stuff.
I like the way that we can never be accused of not bringing the show into the toilet, basically. I was trying to think of a better term for saying that.
Restroom.
Yeah, we drag the show down into the gutter. Even when we've got an official geocaching rep on, we can still bring it down into the toilet.
Right, we've got one final question.
We have. I can't remember who this came from, in fact.
Because you've just got it written as a
random
question.
Written, yes. So it says, why is the paid app no longer supported? And what is the future of the intro app? And it says here, as it's slow and has a few good features, especially compared, I hate reading and writing.
Should we try this again?
Especially when compared to CGO or looking for cash. So basically, why is the paid app no longer being supported? And what is the future of the intro app is the sort of essence of it. And it's something that we've discussed, chewed over, had lots of comments on Facebook and Twitter about. So what's the sort of the line from you guys?
Well, basically the paid app and the intro app are built in two different ways. And so the decision was made some time ago that the intro app will eventually be the app. The paid app will be retired once the intro app has all of the features and more from the paid app. So, for instance, trackables have only recently been introduced in some form into the intro app, and we're continuing to release new functionality into the intro app involving trackables to where it will be a better experience than the paid app. And then, of course, the kind of the biggie is offline functionality and offline lists. Until that is added into the intro app, it won't have all the features that the paid app has. So, but it does have the message center, which the paid app does not have. And eventually it will have offline lists. And, you know, sometime next year, our goal is to retire the paid app and just have the one single app going forward, and then you can decide from there whether you want to combine that with premium membership. Right now, it's a very, even before the intro app was introduced, it was a very confusing situation for people to have a paid app and then also to have premium membership as two separate things. You would buy premium membership and think, a lot of people thought, okay, well, that should cover the paid app. And then vice versa, they bought an app and they thought, well, that That's all I need to do. So it was a confusing user experience. And when the dust all settles and there's one app, it's a free app, but then you can decide, do I want to combine that with premium membership or not? We think it will be a much smoother customer experience. And it's just going to, there are going to be some growing pains getting there and some frustrations. And we know that's going to be difficult, but we're trying to minimize those as much as we can. And that when it's all said and done, we think people are going to be very happy with the experience as compared to what it has been in the past.
The big thing that's missing from the intro app for me at the moment is the offline lists.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't use the intro app primarily because that is missing. I've still got everything that I need in the paid app. It still works. I did notice that there was an update to the paid app not so long ago for iOS 9.
Last week there was one. Yep.
Was there?
Another one, yeah.
All right, okay. So I know that you guys are still updating the app to keep it at least working in its current functionality. And that is still my app of choice. No, I've said it before again. It's great to have NextCache and L4C Pro and this and that and the other. But my go-to app is still the paid app because it's the one that's worked for me for the longest. Mm-hmm. Once there is offline functionality with the intro app, then I will take a serious look at it.
I mean, my just going on from that, my go-to app at the moment is looking for Cache Pro. And it was always... I would always go to the official geocaching app previously. Mm-hmm. I'm not a massive fan of the intro app as it is. I think it misses some key features. And for me, it's a little bit slow. And I'm running a brand new iPhone 6S. So it's not my phone that's slow.
Did you notice that little drop there? I've got the 6S.
I'm just pointing out that it's not my hardware. It's but quite, yeah. One thing I really like, and I think is a big positive, is the message center. I love it because as we were saying offline a minute ago, Chris, that you can contact a cache owner or another cacher. If someone's in front of you caching and you see their name, you know, it helps build a community. Is that something that's important within geocaching to get that sort of communication between people?
Oh yeah, that was a huge driving factor of developing Message Center. It was something that people told us over and over again that they wanted it to be easier to communicate with other geocachers, and we feel like in Message Center, you know, it's still in its very, you know, early days here, and we've made a lot of updates to it just in recent weeks, being able to reply to messages from email and things like that we think is going to make it easier for people to adopt. But yeah, the big thing is to be able to use it with the app and be able to, it's just kind of a clunky experience in the paid app to try to contact anybody. I mean, you usually have to open your web browser and find the person's profile and kind of zoom in on it. And it's, you know,
and that's if your phone remembers who you are, because often when I log in, I have it set so my web browser wipes everything and forgets everything after a couple of weeks. So it forgets your password, so you then have to log in again. So yeah. The app, I think, it's got a long way to go. But as you say, it's sort of a work in progress, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I still use the paid app as my go-to. And, of course, we do a lot of testing here, so I make myself use the intro more than I would if I wasn't working here. But I'm starting to see the positives of it, and I'm starting to see there's going to be a time when I'm going to be okay with switching. But until offline functionality comes for me and a lot of us, that's a really important thing. Until that is put in there, and it will be, obviously. And once it does, then I'm like you guys, where I think that's when I think, okay, switching is something that I'm going to have to do.
And I think I will go back to, because as I say, I was always official geocaching app. It was always the app that I went to, mm-hmm. but I did move away from it. And I think I will be drawn back with features such as the message center and things like that.
I suppose if you look at the two apps beside each other, if you look at the paid app and you look at the intro app, the paid app does look really old and clunky now, mm-hmm. whereas the intro app is really slick.
It's very slidey and it all sort of works, doesn't it?
Gels. Mm-hmm. once you only have one app, once the official paid app has been dropped, are you going to drop the intro from the intro app name?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it'll just be the geocaching. Yeah, I'm not on the marketing team, but yeah, there's no reason to call it the intro app if it's the only app. So
yeah, I mean, some of the seasoned geocachers will look at, well, that's the intro app. Where's the full one? So, you know,
what could I suggest a feature for it? What I'd like to see on it,
I want to see it make a cup of tea.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Intro app, make tea.
a bit like Siri for geocaching.
Yeah.
What I'd like to see is on the actual geocaching official app, I'd like a little button in the right hand corner, listen to the latest UK geocaching podcast. I think it's a great idea. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's brilliant.
You're a liar.
I'm going to take that straight up the flagpole later today. I'm
definitely gonna take it to Brian.
take it to Brian. Take it to Jeremy. Just mention UK geocaching podcast. They are the awesomest podcast in the awesome world.
And we've got exclusive out of North America interview with geocaching.
Absolutely, well, Chris.
Yeah.
With me, yeah.
Hey, mate, I'm really proud of that. I really am. This has been fantastic. Now, I think that we are almost running out of time, but I want to ask
We've kept Chris on the line for well over an hour and a half now.
Yeah, nearly two. I want to ask you a question that's not on the script. I want to know.
We said that we wouldn't do this.
I want to know what juicy gossip you can tell us. About the future of geocaching. Come on, you've got to have some little nugget that you can share with us.
An exclusive, yeah?
Gosh, I think we've talked for an hour and a half. I think I said everything. I'm not sure that there is any. The next time we talk, I'll try to have a piece of juicy gossip in my back pocket.
Sounds good to
you
me.
You can't put him on the spot like that.
Yeah,
you can't just drag that one out of the bag.
No, because we're friends now. So Chris understands how we're going.
I at least had the decency to email Chris beforehand saying, here's a heads up. This is what we're going to talk to you about. We're not going to... I specifically said we're not going to give you any curveballs.
And I just threw one at you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's
I was going to say something sarcastic, and then I thought, you know, somebody's not going to realize I'm being sarcastic. You know, I was like, well, the ultimate plan is for there not to be any containers. That's what we're going for here. Then somebody will see that in writing somewhere and say, I heard somewhere that they don't like containers probably. Anymore.
So, right.
I'll just keep it as I'll try to think of something for next time.
Cool.
Cracking. Okay. Right. I think that we are going to end this part of the show. We are going to go away and talk about something else, and then we're going to come back to Chris for our Cacher of the Month.
Okay.
Brilliant. Chris, thank you ever so much for joining us. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah, don't go anywhere because we do need to record another bit with you.
I was going to say, do I have to wait here while you guys
go
somewhere
else? Wait there. It'll be clever editing. You won't know the link. It'll be brilliant.
On Periscope earlier, I said, if you want to chat to us, find us on Skype, UK Geocaching Podcast, and we will chat.
So,
in the middle of recording with Chris from Groundspeak, this notification pops up that says, boo, Static Jay here. So I've just phoned him back. So, Jay, say hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm good. Are you yourself?
Oh, yeah. Great.
Coping?
Just a sort of random text message to say, are you coming on Skype? So it's sort of run around and turn everything off electrical.
Now,
I'm good.
You are Static J or Static JNI on geocaching?
Static J. Static J was taken on Twitter by me drunkenly about 10 years ago, before Twitter started. And when I forgot the password, so when I decided to have Static J as my geocaching name, I then went back, tried to revive the account, and they wouldn't give it to me.
Ah, so you sort of duped yourself out of your own username, really?
Yes.
Jay is a regular commenter, contributor to Andy and Amy's geocaching snippets reboot podcast.
Ah, okay, cool.
So we're quite privileged that he's in Ireland and they're all the way over there, and now he's talking to us.
I was just saying to Carl, it's crazy that we've just been talking to Chris, who's 5,000 miles away, and it was crystal clear. Perfect image, perfect voice and everything. It's it's weird. It's weird. Technology is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if technology wasn't amazing, we wouldn't have geocaching, would we?
It definitely brought the world closer together in terms of talking about geocaching. I mean, it is actually pretty cool, especially when we did the Hangouts with Andy, Amy. I mean, they had Australians on. You know, it's just amazing.
How long have you been caching? I mean, we've chatted. We're friends on Facebook. We've chatted online, but we've never, I don't think, ever spoken directly. How long have you been caching?
I started caching in 2013.
So not that long, realistically.
It wasn't my cache count isn't actually that big. Because I started geocaching as a way. I had my nephew staying with me one night, and he was, "Oh yes, we want to do something really cool tomorrow." So I actually just typed cool things to do on a Sunday when you want to go out with your nephew and geocaching. So by the time he woke up the next morning, I had the app downloaded, the installed, and had every cache in our town singled out, and we went round. We found them, and I never really looked back. I was totally hooked on it.
Fantastic.
How many have you found now?
Let me see. Ones that I've logged, actually, I've only about 164 logged.
I thought you were going to count them as one, and hey, there's that one, that's two, and there's that one, that's three.
I work away a lot, and I really should cache more because I land in the most interesting places, but when I go away, I work, and it is head down, blinkers on, and I was in Belfast yesterday. I had planned to find about 10. I only ended up finding 2 because I ended up in the pub.
There's always a distraction, isn't there? Mind you, in Belfast, it was probably raining anyway, wasn't it?
It was. No, actually, well, it rained heavily in the morning, but I had wanted to find this particular letterbox cache, but in a really area, I don't know why the cache owner put it there. It's in an area down near Belfast Harbour, so it's really covered heavily by security, and you do actually have to go down and do a lot of searching for it. So I just one look at it and went, no.
I did that when I was in Spain a little while ago. I went to find a cache, and it says the cache is next to the bridge. So I go across the bridge, and I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, there's nowhere for this cache to be. And I looked at my wife, and I said, I'm clueless. I haven't got any idea. And she said, well, what's under the bridge? And I looked through the slats on the bridge, and I could see what was sort of, it was a cave, basically, under this bridge. So I climbed down, I looked in, and I went, nah, I don't think so. There is no way I'm crawling in that little hole there, and it is all dark, and I could see a shoe. And you know when you see a shoe and your mind starts going a bit ahead of you, and I'm like, there's a shoe in there. I don't want to find the body that's probably possibly attached to it. So, no.
See, normally you'd think that he'd be quite happy with going into a little cave, seeing as he was born in one.
That's weird.
My sister has moved to a town quite close to us called Lisburn. We're having a little sort of housewarming afternoon tea on last Sunday. So I opened the app, and I was like, that's a 4.5, 5 difficulty. I think I'll go and have a little look at this. So basically, it looks like a 125-meter tunnel crawl up a river. And I was looking, I'll do this in the summer. I thought, yep, definite candidate for summer, bound to get wet. And then I looked at the size of the hole, and I just, no. I mean, I'm a big guy. The water, I'm sure the water would back up eventually hard enough to fire me out. But skinny to go and grab this cache from me. Or no, the emergency services would be needed to extract me.
Jake, I am so sorry. All I can see now is Homer Simpson.
I was thinking exactly the same.
In the top of that tank.
Probably will, yeah. That's what happened.
Right, this really wasn't supposed to be a long call. It was just a quick say hello and how are you, and I want to get you back on the show properly sometime if and when you're available, early-ish part of next year, if you're up for it.
Yeah, cool, no problem.
Excellent. Right, for the moment, I will leave you in pieces. Let's get back to doing the proper show, which was what we were supposed to be doing, so that you can go home because you've got to be at bed in work at 7 tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And Jay, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you really, really soon.
Thank you.
Are you going to do your little Cacher of the Month jingle?
What, in front of an official geocaching rep?
No. Do I have to resurrect one from a previous show? LJ likes to sing the intros.
Well, it's because we've never put an actual Cacher of the Month intro together.
That's because you haven't done one. You keep saying that you will do one for us, and then you never do it.
Okay, you ready?
Got it.
Cacher of the Month! That was something like that.
That was awesome.
There we go.
Really nice.
Awesome. It was great, wasn't it?
I loved it, yeah. I'm going to make that my ringtone. I'm going to just...
Absolutely. Oh, I've got a Christmas ringtone. We'll put that in the intro.
Do we have to?
Never mind. I'll show you in a minute. It's funny. Anyway.
When we recorded one, either the last show or the show before, we suddenly realised that we'd recorded a whole segment for Halloween that was after... The show was going to be released after Halloween. So it was like going to be... I had to cut about 20 minutes out of the show.
We didn't think this. Can I show you it quickly? I'll show Chris as well.
Go on,
here's, here's my... This is my Christmas ringtone. Ready?
There is no reindeer, and a very shiny night.
It's great.
That's been... from... I'm pretty sure that's from the official Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer movie, isn't it? The original stop action. That sounded just like...
It was brilliant, and it was very well scripted, and it wasn't on a drunken night out with my friend about 7 or 8 years ago.
I'm fairly certain that is the second most tragic thing I've ever heard.
That's been my Christmas ringtone, 1st of December, all the way through to Christmas, every year for the last 6 years.
Which means he's transferred it through at least 5 different phones without yeah, losing it.
That's a commitment yeah. right there. That's,
absolutely. That's he has it as well. We have right. matching ringtones.
Stop talking.
Okay.
We need to do the Cacher of the
yes,
Month.
Yes, we do.
And our Cacher of the Month is...
Oh, is that me or you? No, or you. Chris, I'll let you do it.
<Why not? laughs>
Our Cacher of the Month is... Chris, that's you.
Oh, Rock Chalk. That's
there we go.
Rock Chalk. So, we know your name. That's Chris. We don't need to broadcast your email address, although it's probably something like chris@geocaching.com. We now know that your caching name is Rock Chalk.
Yes.
Where did Rock Chalk come from?
Rock Chalk, my caching name was actually, it was originally Running Jayhawks. And I attended the University of Kansas here in the U.S., and our mascot is the Jayhawk. And I used to be a competitive runner, so it was Running Jayhawks. And then I came here to work at HQ, and as I would give tours in the headquarters, and I would tell people who I was, and I would say Running Jayhawks, they would all invariably ask, well, are there other people? Is there, cause it's plural. Is there more than one of you? And it was me and my wife who cashed together. And, but it just, and then they would ask, well, does she work here too? And it led to a lot of questions. And so I finally said, well, let's come up with something that's a little more ambiguous. And so I said Rock Chalk, which is part of the University of Kansas, kind of chant that you hear at sports events. It's Rock Chalk Jayhawk. And so so I took just Rock Chalk from it. And so most people, when they hear it, they think I must be a rock climber of some sort.
That's where I went.
I thought that, yeah.
Which is great because I'm not, but I wish people thought I was. So it makes me feel like I'm really cool because I sound like a rock climber. So I do like tree climbing caches. So I thought, okay, well, I'm not a rock climber, but I do kind of climb. So so I don't feel so bad about the misinterpretation. So yeah, Rock Chalk comes from Rock Chalk Jayhawk, and so that's where my username comes from.
You'll never guess where mine came from. It's Surfer Boy.
He's a boy and he's a
surfer. I'm a boy and I'm a surfer. It's that easy.
Yeah, that's much more clear than the whole convoluted story I just had to tell.
Yeah, but yours is far more interesting.
Yeah, yours is more interesting.
I've seen him surf.
Whoa, I'm a good surfer. You leave me alone. Right. So when did you start caching? We covered this a little bit earlier, didn't we? But when did you start caching?
I started caching in 2011. I had heard about geocaching, but my wife and I were going on a road trip, and we were going to be camping at parks along the way. And I was looking up on the internet. I was looking up information about camping accommodations at the state parks in Kansas, and they had a geocaching contest or promotion of some sort that the state parks, they had put geocaches at every state park in Kansas. So there were something like 50 or 60 of these caches. And I thought, oh, well, that might be fun while we're camping. We can find one of these, see what this geocaching thing's all about. And so one of the first ones that they were all multi-caches, which is quite an undertaking now, I know, I didn't know it at the time, but to have a multi-cache at every state park. So the first one we tried to do, you got to the edge of this wooded area, and I was still like 500 feet away from where I was supposed to go. And so we started ducking into trees, and it wasn't a fun experience. It was the middle of summer. It was very hot. We were just sweating all over, and we found the container with the coordinates to the next stage, and we got out of the woods. And we were covered with ticks, my wife and I. I mean, literally, they were just all over us. And I'm just like, I'm done. That's it. This is crazy. I don't know what this game is, but I don't want any part of it. We didn't even go to find the next stage. We said, we're done. And a couple of days later, I thought, oh, you know, I should give it another try. And thousands of caches later, I'm still doing it. But yeah, so that's kind of how it started. It wasn't a great thing of, I was like, oh, this isn't for me, but yeah, I'm glad I stuck with it.
Did you ever go back and try and find that first cache again?
Not only did we find that cache, we ended up finding every one of the state park caches that summer. We drove all over the state of Kansas, hundreds of miles of driving and the funny thing is, at the time, I didn't know anything about what we have here, DeLorme challenges, or finding caches in every county in a state. I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. So we would literally drive from one state park through a couple of counties to another state park. And that's all we did. We didn't find caches in between. We just wanted to find the state park ones. And then after I really got into the game, looking back, I thought, man, I was way on the other side of Kansas and I could have found a cache in that one county. And I didn't, because I didn't think about it, you know? But yeah, we were one of only two caching usernames that found every one of the state park caches that summer, and it was great. It got me to seeing other parts of the state. I grew up in that state, and I had never been to those other parts of Kansas, and so it was a great way to see new parts of Kansas that I'd never seen before.
Have you found that caching's helped you get to know Seattle better as well, or Washington better since you've moved there?
Definitely Washington, because Washington has an official geo tour in the state parks, and we ended up finding every one of them. So it was we moved here September of last year, and so in October of this year we completed finding all 103 of the state park geo tour caches. So I've seen all of Washington. It's been an amazing way to learn about this new state that we live in. It's been really neat. What's ironic though is that I've done relatively little caching within Seattle, because every weekend we go off somewhere. We just get in the car, my wife and I, and drive somewhere. And I find myself thinking I really need to just take a couple weekends and really go around Seattle itself, because I really haven't so much.
I think that's the best thing about geocaching, is that it takes you places where, I mean, what was that cache called? We went 10 minutes from my front door, and I never knew this place existed. We went there on our bikes, yes, to out by the stream.
Yes.
And I can't remember what the cache is, yes, called. 10 minutes from my front door on a push bike, and we got to this place which was, admittedly, you could hear the motorway, or as you would call it, I guess, the highway. And
sure,
we got to this little stream,
And it was beautiful, wasn't it? And it was somewhere I would never have known about it. And if it wasn't for geocaching, now quite often I go down there on my bike and I just sit and play on my phone or listen to my music and sit and watch the fish.
Inspect your belly button fluff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. See,
they say geocaching takes you to new places. I mean, I've lived in this town most of my life. And it wasn't until I started geocaching that we realised that this town has a cricket club.
It had?
Never knew.
I didn't know that.
No, I was out on an FTF hunt for a series that had just gone live around Fareham. And I'm cycling across and I thought, I don't know this place. It's getting dark. I don't know this place. And I'm on my push bike. Where am I? There's a cricket club. I didn't know we had a cricket club.
Anyway. Do you have lots of cricket clubs over there?
Not a whole lot, one of my good friends who lives in Australia is the president of their cricket club. So I'm always reading about cricket in my Facebook feed. So I feel like I know cricket, even though it's not
don't start on football.
No. I was just going to say, I hear that the Aussies are quite big into cricket. I don't know anything about cricket. So I'll just put it out there that I was told that they're not very good at it.
Oh, I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that.
Okay, what's the next question?
Next question, moving on. So you obviously cache with your wife. Does she cache under your name, or does she go out on her own?
No. If she finds a cache, it's always with me. She kind of humors me. She's not as not nearly as hardcore into it as I am, but she loves going out for a day and going around and seeing new places. Whereas I could strictly just cache. I could spend a whole day caching. You know, she wants to stop at the museum and do this. I'm like, all right, fine. We'll stop at the museum. But, you know,
stop at the museum if there's a cache there. That's fine.
Yeah, I prefer there's a cache.
And then move on.
But no, she's been very supportive of my addiction to the game.
I know people have sort of different reasons that they've got a favorite cache or favorite caches. You've got a hell of a lot of cache finds. So can you sort of specify one that you can, that stands out, or have you got one that you really like?
The one that, as I was thinking about that question, the one that I always bring up, it's actually in South Dakota here in the U.S. And the cache is called Hail to the King. And I just looked, and it's temporarily disabled at the moment. But it is a where I go cache, and the posted coordinates take you to a rock spire. So it's inside a park, and there's these twin rocks. Well, not twin rock spires, but rock spires right next to each other. They rise out of this river, and one of them is a little taller than the other one. The taller one is called the King, and the slightly shorter one is called the Queen. And people climb up on these rock spires. Well, the Queen spire is a little bit easier to get to the top of. The King requires, especially at the start of it, a little bit more technical climbing. But you get to the top, and you've got your GPS unit. And so I get to the top of it, and I'm waiting. I'm trying to get it to advance me to the next stage of the where I go. But it keeps saying that I'm 5 or 6 feet away, and I had to basically reach over like the edge of the rock spire to get it to advance me to the next stage. And then when you go to the next stage, it takes you to I won't give it away, but there's more climbing involved. And I like climbing trees and climbing rocks and things like that. So it was an experience that I really enjoyed. But again, that's the first one that comes to mind. But then, as you said, I found a lot of caches, and I'm always blown away by the creativity that people come up with and the places that they take you to. Because I personally don't have that. I don't have engineering ability, so I can't make gadget caches and things like that. But I'm always amazed by what geocachers can come up with and the creativity that they show, whether it be in the cache listing, just coming up with a fun way of describing a cache, or actually the container, or the place that they take you to. It's remarkable what some of the people in the community are able to come up with.
Excellent. And do you have, during your vast amount of caches that you found. I say this because I still can't quite believe how many caches you've actually found, because I'm struggling to get to 1,000 at the moment with the way. But to be fair,
he's like Brian. He likes talking.
Yeah, no, I have an 11-month-old at home.
So what was your excuse for the previous 4 years?
Well, every year I've got better. You're winding me up now. Every year I've got better, more result, apart from this year, which clearly I'm not going to.
This year we can forgive you because you've got an 11-month-old.
Okay, so
you're losing 10 months.
Do you have a funniest caching moment, something that's happened or a memory of caching, which is specifically quite funny?
Oh, I would...
Apart from talking to us, don't say that.
I think probably the one for me, it ironically involves, again, where I go. My wife and I took a road trip over the Christmas holiday a couple years ago, and we cached all day. We were in South Carolina over on the East Coast here in the U.S., and we had cached all day, and there was a where I go that I wanted to get, and it was at a baseball field. And it was a public park, and it was there were no hours, so I could be there in the dark. It was something like 6:30 at night. It wasn't very late, but it was wintertime, so it was well past dark. And so you had to go out on the baseball field and follow these steps from the where I go. And so I'm out there in the dark trying to, my wife stayed in the car. She said, I'm not doing, you're crazy. Go and do that. I'm staying in the car. So I stayed in the car and I'm out doing the where I go. And then to get the final, you had to go off the field into a wooded area. And I've got my flashlight and I'm trying to find it. And it took me a while, and I finally head back to the car. And as I'm going back to the car, I see there's another car parked next to our car. Again, in the dark, nobody else should be there. As I get closer, I realize it's a police officer who had seen someone parked at this baseball field in December in the dark, which is very unusual. And I don't blame him for stopping. So my wife is standing there trying to explain geocaching to him. And I get there and she says, okay, can you try to explain, because I'm not doing a very good job. And he was great. He was very understanding. But I always think the encounters with law enforcement are always some of the funnier experiences. And my experience has been that they've always been great to me, and which I don't, if I put myself in their shoes, I don't know that I would always be as understanding if I was in their shoes as they are to me. But yeah, so that's where some of my funnier moments have come, when I've had to explain the game to somebody who doesn't necessarily know exactly what it is that we do.
I have a friend who's a copper who geocaches.
Do you?
Yeah, and he actually knows, like, he's found about the same as me, actually.
Cool.
Not far off or above, but yeah. So if I ever get stopped by him, I'm happy, I'm fine.
Yeah, unless thinks he knows what you're doing and he's just going to arrest you for the fun of it.
Yeah, this is true.
I'm sorry, sir, I don't believe you. You're coming to the station.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at the next question, which is, what do you love or hate about caching? I suppose there's nothing really that you're going to hate about it, and clearly we've covered what you love about it, but is there one thing that you love the best? What's the best about geocaching?
No, kind of just what you said for yourself earlier, that it takes you to places that you wouldn't maybe have thought to go to otherwise, or it especially just as you guys were saying, in your own town, things that, I mean, I grew up in Kansas in generally the same town, and it, but you get into a routine of where you go usually. And so geocaching tends to take you off the beaten path and take you to those places that you wouldn't have thought of before. And God, the number of just really neat, out of the way little spots that I just never would have thought to visit. And it's because somebody thought to put a geocache there. And so that, to me, is always going to be my favorite, my favorite thing about the hobby.
Well, I have had an awesome time. It's been a good show.
I've had an even better than awesome time. I think it's been brilliant. Great fun.
I've had an average time. It's been okay. It's been average.
We'll try harder. we'll try harder next time.
Slightly above average. No, it's been great. I've really enjoyed talking to you guys.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. And we will endeavour to get you back on the show at some point next year, maybe.
I'd really like that.
I'd enjoy that. That'd be great.
Chris, thank you ever so much for your time, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
There you go, folks. That is all that we've got time for. Thank you ever so much for listening. Thank you very much for supporting us over the last 12 months.
And if you didn't enjoy it, we enjoyed it on your behalf.
If you didn't enjoy it, please tell us. If you did enjoy it, please tell other people. It would be lovely to be able to improve it from feedback. Have a safe Christmas. Have a fantastic new year. And we will talk to you again in January.
Happy Christmas.